On EWTN Global Catholic Radio, you'll hear a wide variety of speakers discussing a multitude of topics, from atheism to zeal. But what are the fundamental realities that often lie hidden beneath these topics? Well, Father Thomas Dubé uncovers these very foundations on the program Bedrock Basics. Now here's Father Dubé.
Thank you for joining us again this week. Happy to have you. I am Father Thomas Dubé, and this week I'm going to begin by asking you to use your imagination a couple times. And the first use is to imagine yourself as a roving TV reporter, and you've been commissioned by your station to ask the people in a kind of poll, do you love the truth? You are, suppose, in Times Square or downtown in any one of our major cities. And I say that to get a cross-section of the population. How would they answer that question? First of all, I think most of them would be quite amazed that you asked it. Because to most people, it seems obvious anybody with common sense loves truth. But of course, just a minute about that. But in any event, you go on with your commission, your job, and you go up to three people, suppose, and let's just imagine that they represent the population pretty well. And the first question you ask, the first person of whom you ask the question, do you love the truth? After perhaps asking you, why do you ask? It's so clear. They would go on and say, well, of course I love the truth. Anybody with common sense would say that. Now, this person is probably thinking, and I believe that the other ones would say the same sort of thing basically. I think all would be amazed that you asked it, and they would say they love the truth. Now, there might be a sharpie or two in the group that says, it depends what you mean by truth. But in any event, most of these people would say something like this, and I think that they're thinking about matters of, say, teachers in school, they should teach the truth. They're thinking about business people when they tell you the product does this or is like that, that they're telling the truth. You like that politicians tell the truth and so on. And in business deals. Fine. And there might be that sharpie who wants to say something about depends on what you mean by truth. I'm a relativist and I don't believe there is such a thing as the truth. Which really doesn't hang together. I'll say a word about that when we get on here. Now, these people are convinced that they love truth, but in many cases, and there would be some exceptions to what I say next, in many cases, there's one large exception to their love for truth, and that is when some sort of evidence seems to threaten their lifestyle. The evidence for this, and I'm going to provide an ample amount of it, because a lot of people wouldn't believe it on just my saying it. So I'm going to give you evidence, both secular and religious, mostly secular evidence for this. When evidence seems to contradict a person's chosen lifestyle, some kind of psychological screens come up before the mind. And obscure the clarity and the impact of the evidence. And I will give you some evidence for this shortly, so just hang on for a few moments. And they begin to resist the evidence, if not reject it out of hand. That's a very interesting phenomenon that this happens. And there's not the least doubt that it does, as I shall show shortly. This is why in matters that affect lifestyle, there's so much disagreement in a population. And the three matters that, as far as I can figure out, that mostly affect lifestyle are morality, religion, and politics. And this is where people disagree most of all in these three areas. And I find it very interesting that these are precisely the areas that affect our lifestyle. You see, the evidence for something in religion or morality is not lacking. Often it's not lacking at all. It can be coercive. Coercive, I don't mean forcing the intellect or the will. I don't mean that. But I mean it clear as day. No decent argument against it. And people still resist. That's very interesting. Religion and morality. And both of them deeply affect lifestyle, as is perfectly obvious that they do. And politics also, but I'm not interested in politics directly at the moment. That's another question. I am interested in religion and morality at the moment. So that views about religious matters and moral matters affect money, pleasure, put it in the plural, pleasures, freedom, what we want to do and how we want to live. Hence, there is so much disagreement about these two areas in particular that are our concern. Now, lest you think that I'm exaggerating, let me ask you to use your imagination a second time. You are no longer a TV roving reporter in Times Square. Suppose that someone you have not seen for 10 years, very dear to you, perhaps the most dear person on the planet, after our Lord and his mother, but most dear, and you don't really know where this person is. But you have an opportunity. Somebody gave you a great big gift, use of a car and money to make a trip. You find out that you could go visit this beloved one of yours, but you don't know where he or she is. What would you do? If you don't have an up-to-date atlas in the home, I'm quite sure you're going to be off to a bookstore and get an atlas. 1999, 2000, or 2001, whatever the year happens to be. You are so convinced you know what is inside an atlas that it has a nice cover and it does say it's up to date on the cover. You don't bother to look at it. So you bring it to the clerk, you pay for it, and you bring it home. When you get home and you have a few moments free, you take the atlas out of the little bag or the big bag it's in, and you begin to look for that town. You find out, by the way, somewhere or somehow that this person, this friend of yours, this beloved, might be, whoever it is in a town in the United States named Zilla, Z-I-L-L-A-H. There is such a town. I looked it up in one of our states. I won't tell you at the moment where it is, because that's part of using imagination and what I'm asking you to do. Zilla is a town, I think, unknown by 99.99% of Americans, except perhaps a fair number of people in that state. And so you find out that this is where the person is, but you don't know the state. And suppose you are in Florida or New York, and you find out that this Zilla is in Washington State, where actually it is. So when you get home from the bookstore, you open the atlas, you go to Washington State, and after a long search, you find that this little town is there. Now, that's if you got a normal atlas, you would be happy. But you need much imagination for my next request. Suppose when you went to that bookstore and asked for the atlas, and they gave you one, and you didn't look at it, and you got home, and you found out that the atlas has no maps in it at all. And on every page, it has a statement something like this. According to us, to get from one place to another in the United States, have cheery goodwill and drive as you like. It really doesn't matter where your destination is. Well, that is absurd, and that's why you need a vivid imagination for what I'm asking here. You would be most irate, upset. You would take your book, it's not an atlas really, it looks that way from the outside, angry, hope you keep your cool though, and you bring it back and ask for a genuine atlas or your money back. You don't want to hear about this cheery goodwill and go as you like. And you don't want to hear about relativism, that it doesn't matter where it is, that we really don't know where it is, that it isn't important where it is. If you think it's in Nevada or you think it's in Louisiana, that's okay. That's true for you. Go on with it. And we all have different opinions, and they change from year to year anyhow. That is relativism, by the way. Maybe more about that later on in our series. I don't know if we'll get to that or not. But in any event, you want a real atlas. And you're wise, of course. Now, about this little scenario I'm sketching for you, I'd like to notice several crucial facts about it. They are illuminating. Observe that when you think there's something important, you don't want relativity. You want truth. You want to know exactly where is that place and how you're going to get there. You just don't buy the relativity of some professors in our universities who deny objective truth. When there is something important, everyone wants certitude. And this, in your mind, in our example, is most important, to see your beloved again. So, the first thing to notice in our scenario, you want truth and you are convinced that it's objective, that it isn't simply what somebody thinks and somebody else can think the opposite, and that's okay also. It is not okay. Now, the second thing to notice, you want certitude. You don't want simply probability, that it could be in Louisiana or it could be Washington State. You want to know for sure exactly where that town is. Thirdly, you notice in this scenario that you have searched and you have worked to find out where Zila is. I don't know, in my example, where exactly you found out that this beloved is there. Maybe it was a postcard or something. But anyhow, you really get busy and you examine the atlas. Where in Washington State is it? And from wherever I am, how do I get there best? What interstates do I take? And if I don't even know my own city too well to get to a certain interstate, I'm going to study that. I'll get another map. We want certitude, and we work and search to find out the truth about where Zila is and how do we get there. The fourth little item to notice in this scenario is something that may indeed surprise you. You'll notice that the maps that you use to get from wherever you are to Zila, Washington, you'll notice that the maps limit your freedom precisely to enhance it. Now that sounds impossible. And of course it's not impossible. It limits it in your freedom in one way, and it increases your freedom in another way. The map is useful to you precisely because it limits you. Not simply it's helpful and it limits you, it's helpful because it limits you. People who think that maps and regulations are always bad news for everybody, I don't want any regulation or any map or anybody to tell me what the truth is. These people are very unreal. Nobody is cavalier about truth and certitude when something is really important. You'll notice that about yourself. You're never cavalier about truth when something is important to you. You treasure our fifth little suggestion here about this scenario. You'll notice that you love and treasure your map, your atlas, and maybe the maps of the city you're leaving. You treasure your maps precisely they do this limiting, which then enhances your freedom to go see your beloved. If you don't know where the person is, if you don't know how to get there, you can't see, you have no freedom to see beloved. If you will accept some limitations on freedom, you are then free. And notice how the map, by the way, tells you that you don't take 10,000 right turns, because if you did, you end up at Hudson Bay in Canada, maybe, And you may now take 10,000, probably many more than that, left turns. You'll end up in the Gulf of Mexico or in Mexico itself, you see. So that your map is very illustrative of why we should love the truth. It enhances our freedom in many ways. Now, we come to the crunch question. Everything I've said so far leads to this. It's a bedrock basic. And of course, what I just said about the objectivity of truth is surely a bedrock basic in itself. We can't function, we humans, unless we believe in truth, objective truth. And of course, even the relativist does. When he considers there's something important, oh yes, indeed, in the classroom, in the professor's room, he will say, perhaps some professors will say, there's no such thing as objective truth, unless it's something he thinks is important. So if he doesn't think there's any objective truth about religion and morality, think what you like, one opinion is as good as another, you can be pretty sure he doesn't value either field. I don't know how one could escape that conclusion. Now, the crunch question we've arrived at is this. Do I love the truth regarding morality and religion? Do others love the truth? That is their affair, but I have to answer it for myself, as you must answer it for yourself. There are two signs or tests. I don't see how a person could possibly deny the signs and the tests of whether a person loves the truth or not. And especially I'm thinking now in these two areas. The first sign of loving truth, really in a way, any kind of truth, but let's focus on our two areas that pertain to the crunch question. People who love truth search and study and work to find it. Just take our example of the beloved in Zilla, Washington. You work and find the best way to get there after perhaps working to find out where it is, unless you receive that postcard. You work at it. John Henry Newman, who knew this whole field of religion, morality, and how people react to both of them, he knew that field and wrote more brilliantly about it than anybody I have seen or read. Just brilliant. And he makes this point. It's a very short sentence. Few people bestir themselves regarding religion and morality. And this is true. If you've had any experience with the human situation in these two areas, you know it is true. It was true in his day, it is true in ours. Very few people bestir themselves to learn more and settle questions about religion and morality. And as he pointed out, most people are content with what comes their way and their feelings and their preferences. Just the opposite of study. Now, I'm not saying any of this to be casting stones at anybody. This is not my business. Please notice how I worded the question. Do I love the truth? And I submit, though, that you need to ask yourself the same question. And this is a bedrock basis, a basic for sure. By truth, we are in touch with reality. By error, we're out of touch with reality. If I think that, to use another example, a geographical one, if I think that Lima is a suburb of Paris, and I'm going to fly to Lima and buy a ticket to Paris, I'm in bad shape when I arrive. I should have gone to Peru. I'm out of touch. In my error, I'm out of touch with reality. Now, that's not a huge blunder, but it'd be very inconvenient and expensive mistake. But nonetheless, truth is valuable because, by definition, it puts you in touch with reality, the way things actually are. And of all things important to the human person, nothing compares with religion and morality. This is probably a reason why atheists get so bothered about their denial of God. many of them seem unable to let the thing alone, because everyone senses that these ultimate questions are extremely important, even when they don't want to look at them. Anyhow, I won't go into that particular point. Let me give you a couple of examples of how very few people study to find out religious and moral truth. Some few years ago, I was giving a retreat in New York City, and I was given a copy of the New York Times every day, nicely and kindly. And I'll get to the New York Times in just a moment. I had something favorable to say about their coverage of the episode. But I noticed one night, it was in March 1987, I was watching ABC News, and the lead story that night was that the Vatican had just come out with a document on birth technologies, artificial insemination, and so on. And it's the only organization I know of that has studied this thing thoroughly. There were, said the New York Times, 62 ethicists consulted, 22 scientists consulted. And the study took, I think it was several years, with all kinds of experts, to talk about the morality and or the immorality of certain birth technologies. And this was big news because nobody else had done it. And as far as I know, nobody else has done it since. Now, the next day, the New York Times had, to its credit, I think it was the whole document, complete with footnotes. They had an accompanying article that didn't exactly grab me much. How people react, of course, and that's the way news is handled this day. We'll find some dissenters that don't accept this and so on, but I'm going to leave that all aside. I don't mean that they're looking for dissenters, but they do find them. Okay. Now, what I should like to notice about this is, after ABC News presented the document and that aspect of it that would most interest people, they then went to a kind of moderate-sized American city to interview somebody on the street, one of these roving reporters. And I remember it so well. The reporter went up to this woman. It was a moderate-sized town, perhaps 100,000 people. Doesn't matter, it could be New York City for that matter. And asked this woman, "Ma'am, you've heard that there is this document from the Vatican on birth technology," something to that effect. And the question was, "What do you think of it?" I was so amused. Immediately she said, "It's wrong." Notice, this is the very day the document had come out. I don't think she had read it on her computer, the internet. At least she said nothing about internet. On the very day it comes out, somebody makes a statement. And I cite this not because I'm interested particularly in one person. It's typical of human beings. As soon as they hear something about this sort of thing, they'll make the judgment right away. It's wrong. Without even reading the document, imagine. You notice Newman's statement, "Few bestir themselves regarding religion and morality. Don't even bother to look at the document or read it." That is very interesting. The same sort of thing happens as regards something as unpopular as contraception. And everybody knows what the Catholic Church teaches, and I needn't repeat that. And everybody knows how many people reject it and all that. I don't want to be getting into that sort of thing at the moment. I just want to make a point that is relevant to the point we're dealing with in this bedrock basic. So that the point I want to make is, I am pretty confident that not 1% of Americans have really studied the pros and the cons of contraception. 1% would be pretty generous sort of judgment. If you want to make it 5%, go ahead. But I think you're way off. I think that's far more. I have been reading on that subject, both those in favor of it and those in favor, those who accept the Catholic Church's teaching and those who reject it. I've read both sides for at least 3-4 decades now. That doesn't make me an expert. And by the way, you are not an expert by reading several books or articles. And yet, with most people by far not having studied the question, you find in the polls that are regularly taken that almost everybody has a definite view about it. And most of them say it's wrong. And they haven't studied it at all. I suspect they can't even know how complicated the moral principles are that are involved here. And I know at least that much about it because I have read them over and over again from all kinds of different authors, pro and con, to the whole question. And I know how complicated it is. But again, it's what Newman says. Few people bestir themselves regarding religion and morality. You would think they would say, in something this important, I've got to study this thing. Human sexuality is beautiful, and it is good, and we may not tinker with it. I've got to find out about this. But no, most people, as Newman says, just accept what comes their way, and they don't bestir themselves to look into it. That is not a good sign of loving truth. We'll see you next week. Thank you.